Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you guys are all doing well as summer's just kicking off. I can't believe how time has flown already. It's 4th of July this weekend, so celebrate our independence, hopefully our unity again soon, and the fact that we're the home of the free, the home of the brave. And when we're closing out tonight, I'll be playing a song by my guest next week, who is a veteran who came back with PTSD and brain injury, and he wrote a song called, aptly enough, Brainstorms. And so I want to thank all of our service military brothers and sisters for their service and sacrifice, and wish you all a safe 4th of July. I kind of hate it. In our city, they let the amateurs play with explosives, and they let them do it for a week. So for my three dogs and bird and my own PTSD and the PTSD of our military and others out there, I hope you're in a city where they only have organized firework displays, which are beautiful, and the experts take care of the safety, and not the crazy neighbors out having a few beers firing bottle rockets into your yard. So if it gets loud tonight, you'll know it's because they told people that they could buy fireworks starting last weekend, but it wasn't legal to fire them off until July 2nd. So, knowing human nature, how do you think that's been working out the last week? Not so much. In any case, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your weekly Wednesday host, Kim Justice. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I'm excited. This is a special night where I'm going to, where I've got a frog in my throat. And I'm going to introduce you to a pair of new hosts that are going to be launching a new show called Moving Forward. It'll be on the third Sunday of each month, and so they'll be premiering their own first show. July 18th, I believe, is the date, third Sunday of each month, and I hope you guys will tune in. But I know some of the shows that they have lined up, a lot of great information, and I thought this would be a good opportunity for all of us to get to know them personally a little bit together. myself included. We haven't had a chance to talk that much, and while I get to know them, you guys will get to know them and then enjoy their shows. So, two hosts, Kelly K.J. Jones, was an active mom who loved to ride roller coasters, attend track meets, homeschool, and teach Bible study. KJ knew better than to let a little fatigue wear her down. One night, things changed. And I'm going to let her, tell you a little more about that. But today, she's a certified life coach and grant writer who believes a day without laughter is a day wasted. Amen, by Charlie Chaplin. For more on Kelly, see forwardlifecoach.com. Now, co-host, Dr. Valentina is a licensed clinical psychologist from Chicago who is trained as a general psychologist to perform therapy and neuropsychological testing to individuals in English and Spanish. Dr. Valentina's interests include social and cultural, environmental injustices, the integration of spirituality in therapy, trauma work, and neuropsychological disorders such as ADHD, learning disorders, autism, and brain injury. For more on Dr. Valentina, see her website, drvalentinapsyd. And I suppose there's supposed to be a .com on there. I'm going to bring them on both right now. First, I will unmute. Kelly, welcome.
Hey, Kim. Thank you so much for having us.
And welcome, Dr. Valentina. How are you gals doing tonight?
Hello. Thank you so much. We're doing great. How about you?
Pretty good. We've had we got like way hot too early, and this week we've had a reprieve like in the 80s, and I have just been so happy about that after my brain injury, and as I get older, and you're in Chicago, you get the extremes, but when it's too cold or too hot, too far another end, either end of the spectrum, it really messes with my residuals from my brain injury. So this week, where it's been in the 80s, has just been a real blessing, because next week, the really high humidity and high 90s and in the hundreds come back again like they were the last 2 weeks. So it's been a great week to get out and get some things done. Tomorrow I want to get my car washed, pull a few weeds, do everything that I'm not going to be doing next week because of the temperature. But I think, so how about you, Kelly?
Everything's awesome. My daughter laughs because I have a convertible, and when it's like, as long as it's 60 degrees, I have the top down. So I have it down with, I have the top down and the heater on, so it doesn't make a difference. And when it's 90, 100 degrees, I still have the top down. So I just, every day is a good day. Every day is a good day. I mean, you know, Kim, I mean, just grateful to be alive. So every day is a good day. I find excitement and enjoyment in everything. In every day.
Yeah, there's always something. I think it's funny. I've just got to mention, because the regular listeners will know this, but each time, and I've only talked to Kelly a couple of times, I find out something that we have in common. Now, I have a convertible also. We're both only children. Yeah, I do. And when I was probably your age, I did exactly what you're talking about. At this point, when it gets to be that 95 degrees or whatever, I'm done and just have the air conditioning blowing in my face without the, we get so humid here that it's age. It definitely is. You know, I did the same thing you did, drove until it was, you know, 50 degrees with the heat on. That I could still do. I just put on a coat and tie a funky looking hat around my head or put on earmuffs. But the hot part, man, I've gotten to be kind of a wimp as I've aged a little bit because it gets to be 95 with 70% humidity. And I'm like, geez, you know, just give me the air conditioning vents and have all of them pointed in my face. But we both have aneurysms, both only children, both have convertibles.
Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
We both have dads with Parkinson's.
Right, exactly. Mm. So,
you might be my sister by another mother.
I was going to say, and the other thing is that you audience know that I said Kelly quotes KJ nickname Jones, and you know I'm Kim Justice, and so our initials are also the same. So in just a couple of conversations, we've got all kinds of things in common. So super, super incredible. What I'm going to do is, Dr. Valentina, one thing I'd like to add, well, what I'll say and then I'll let you guys speak for yourselves is the show moving forward, of course, that's what we all want to do. The alternative to moving forward is staying stuck or going backwards. And that doesn't make for what I believe God hoped us to have, which is a life that's happy, joyous, and free. We're going to always meet life on life's terms. Nobody made us any promises that life was going to be a piece of cake all the time and that there weren't going to be struggles. But we have to be focused on moving forward as long as we're still drawing a breath, because we're responsible. We're not victims. We're responsible in large part for our quality of life. Now, something might happen to us that compromises the quality of life as we knew it, as we wanted it. But when it becomes our new reality, at some point after we grieve appropriately, you know, we need to do what I talk about in the beginning, and that's have an awareness that things aren't maybe going to go back to exactly the way they were, and that now we're in God's plan, not my plan. And for that, we need help a lot of times, and I know Kelly will concur, and that's one of the reasons why Dr. Valentina is participating in the show. Kelly is our survivor, but as I was talking about with the two of them earlier, and all of us know that, all of the listeners know that whenever we go through change, game-changing events particularly, whether it's brain injury or any aspect of life, you know, a divorce, the thing that just happened in Florida, God bless the people down there, you know, tragedies, whatever it might be, that there's going to be a psychological aspect to everything. And, you know, it's interesting, I was talking about the 4th of July coming and talking about as an outro at the end, playing a little bit of music that's actually done by veterans, patriotic music, and they, due to their blast injuries, which is the cousin to your sports concussions, Kelly, that you're going to talk about, but, you know, trauma, we traditionally thought of PTSD, and now I guess the book is, they're changing the, that it's not a disorder, what? PTS, right? I can't keep up with the change of vernacular in almost everything in life right now. It's like, come on, I'm just getting this down, and we're going to change the words on everything. But PTS, we characteristically thought of that as being something that belonged to veterans. You know, it was mm-hmm. shell shock back in World War II, and there was a different name through each conflict, and we kind of associated that with military life. And what we've come to learn is that it is very prevalent in civilian life as well. And a lot mm-hmm. of people here, you know, the listeners here who have been through brain injury, whether it was an aneurysm and in, you know, in my case, getting my head sawed open and, you know, pretty traumatic going through the rupture itself and being misdiagnosed and suffering for 24 hours, but then waking up from a coma 11 days later, looking like Frankenstein with a C-scar around my face and half my head shaved. That was traumatic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I had some things coming up that put me in a vulnerable position for being a great PTSD candidate. And then that happened and it stacked. And so I think one of the things that happens a lot in brain injury, regardless civilian, military, whatever, is that a lot of times maybe the traditional medical model will catch and treat a person for their TBI. Let's say they got in a car accident, so we physically know they had a brain injury or a blast injury in the case of our military. And they might pick up on the PTSD part, but not the TBI part, or pick up on the mm-hmm. TBI part, but not the PTSD part. And mm-hmm. there is some overlapping on the symptoms, so I can see why it would be challenging for them. But one of the reasons why Dr. Valentina is going to be here participating in this show is that their shows is because mm-hmm. there's a psychological aspect to everything that she and Kelly are going to be talking about. So Kelly will be talking from a survivor perspective and to the people that she's interviewing and the things that she shares as a survivor who's actually experienced these things. That's something that you can read about, but until you've actually lived in that head, you know, you just haven't lived, you know, you just haven't lived.
What I find, the more I talk to people, is the uniqueness in the story. So the way my story started off was I was having these headaches, and I was roller skating, like you said, I was swimming, I was doing all these things with my kids, you know, brawn and brain. And at the same time, I was writing a Bible study curriculum, writing a Sunday school curriculum, overseeing a, voter registration group, nonpartisan. I started a Democratic one and a Republican one. So I was overseeing all these things. And so my friends just kept saying, Kelly, you know, you're getting old. You know, Kelly, slow down. And all this other kind of stuff. So what I did was I took in what everybody else was giving me, and mm-hmm. I started to espouse that as my belief. I started to say, well, you know what? I'm getting old. I'm tired. I'm this. And what was happening is the inflammation, the neuroinflammation was steadily increasing because I was just taking on what everybody else said.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day mm-hmm. I was preparing a Bible study lesson, and what I found was I just see the words. Like, everything was blurred. And so I said, well, you know what? I'll take an hour nap, and then I'll get back up again. Because I would start my Bible study lessons like 12, 1 o'clock at night. So I slept, or I tried to sleep. I couldn't sleep. I tried to sleep for an hour, got back up, didn't work. Tried to sleep for another hour, got back up, it didn't work. So finally what happened is I went to the doctor. And when I went to the general practitioner, he said, oh, well, you know what? You need glasses. So now I'm getting old, I need to sleep, I need glasses, so I'm taking all these things that everybody's saying, but I'm not getting better. So with that, the frustration started to come in, like, God, am I really getting old? I think I'm still dancing with the kids, but I'm thinking maybe this is what's going on. So what happened is I went and got the glasses. Glasses didn't work. You know, then she tried to give me medication, but my dad does not believe in medication. My dad's a farmer, so I wouldn't take the medication. And I still was not getting better. And I sat down and I said, hey, wait a minute. I said, you know, my maternal aunt, my maternal uncle, my maternal grandfather died of a cerebral aneurysm. Uncle died of an aortic aneurysm. Can I please get tested for this? Nah, you know, I think you're just exaggerating, or not exaggerating. She didn't say those words. But I think you are getting too worried about this. It's just a minute thing. I said, well, can you please just give me a CAT scan? Let's just see what happens. I'm from New Jersey, you know, that assertive salesperson. And so there's a lot of frustration going on at the time, because what happened was I was communicating what I thought was a sense of urgency, but she was not taking it that way. So I wound up going, getting the CAT scan, and guess what? I had an aneurysm. So for 6 weeks, I continued at UNC. And I was going to UNC to try and get this aneurysm checked. And basically the doctors were saying, oh, you know, you just need to, you need to rest, you need this. And I'm thinking, I need to rest. This is the same exact female who opened 2 hotels, brand new Courtyard by Marriott hotels simultaneously. And 3 months into the job, they gave me 3 additional hotels. So now I'm doing 2 in New York, 2 in New Jersey, and the Newark Airport one. So I'm like, you know, I know that I can do more. I can't understand why everybody keeps telling me to slow down. If anything, you know, it depends on how you get those endorphins or how you get that stimuli. And my stimuli did not come from resting. It came from exertion. So I went to the hospital 6 weekends, 6 Fridays in a row, you know, admitted. The last Friday I went there, my mom came to the hospital. And my mom, I'm an only child, my parents and I were very, very close, told them everything up until the time I got married. And basically, my mom came to the hospital, and she saw me there lying with all these tubes, bedpan, et cetera. And she couldn't look at me. And I've never seen a time when my mom just could not look. So I was like, gosh, so maybe I am worse off than I think, you know? Said something to the doctor, and I thank God for doctors who can say, who are humble enough to say, I don't know it all. You know, I don't know it all. And what this doctor said to me, he said, look, he said, there are 3 types of aneurysm. The first one is a balloon. The second one is an omega. And the third one is a heart shape on the top. He said, and I operate when you get to the third one. He said, we're waiting for your aneurysm to rupture. I said, what the heck? There's a 50% fatality rate if you wait until the aneurysm ruptures. So what I did was I got on the which, like I said, I thank God for this doctor, because I think he is phenomenal in the sense that he said, I don't know. So he gave me 3 doctors that I could go to. I wound up contacting one in Philadelphia. And the one I contacted in Philadelphia said, send me your paperwork. It was a Tuesday right around noon. So I sent him my MRIs, et cetera. And then at 4 o'clock, he called me back and said, I need to see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
So, look, tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., I'm still cooking, cleaning, you know, doing stories, you know, teaching homeschool, everything like that. And so my ex-husband came home, and he's like, Kelly, what are you doing cooking and cleaning? He's like, we need to get to Philadelphia. So I was still preparing Bible study lessons, everything, until midnight. And he said, look, you've got to stop working. We've got to get to Philadelphia. So we drove to Philadelphia, got to the hospital, Jefferson Hospital, and the doctor said, on the way I stopped at the Marriott, you know, brushed my teeth and everything, because I couldn't go in front of a new doctor, you know, put on some deodorant, that kind of stuff. Got to the hospital, and Dr. Rosenwasser said to me, he said, you know, I looked at your paperwork, and we need to admit you. I said, well, I can't be admitted just yet. I said, I'm hungry. He came up with my kids. I said, we didn't have a chance to eat. You know, I wanted to. He said, no. He said, you don't understand. We're admitting you right now. You can eat in the hospital. He walked out, closed the door, and told the nurse that my aneurysm could rupture at any moment. So when I was in North Carolina, my aneurysm was a balloon. When I got to Philadelphia, my aneurysm was an omega. I wound up having a coil and a stent. So afterwards, I spoke to several people about this, et cetera. And when I spoke to clinicians, I remember my doctor. I can't remember his name. Oh, he was gorgeous. Whatever his name was. Renwick or Reddick or something like that. I can't remember what his name was. I spoke to him. And when I got back to the hospital, he said, I can't believe that you're happy and doing fine. I said, what are you talking about? He said, do you realize that you just had a coil and a stent for cerebral aneurysm? And I said, yeah. He said, I've worked with patients that are like, you know, are out for months. He's like, but you're fine. And I said, you know what? Growing up, my parents made me talk all the time about everything. So when my mom came home from work, she was a teacher, we had to talk about my day. During dinner, after the news, we had to talk. Then after dinner, I had to go for a 5-mile walk with my dad. We had to talk. And so through all that talking, I learned to never, ever let anything settle within me. So when something happens, I need to talk about it. Like, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to clear the air because I don't let things settle on me. I don't let things set in and disturb me. So the reason why I wanted to do the podcast, and if you look at everything on my website, is as a teacher, as a coach, as a colleague, I'm finding that more and more people are not talking. Mm-hmm. And when they don't talk, things fester. And so as a life coach, one thing that I don't do, and my friends will tell you straight up, is I do not talk about relationships. I talked to one person about a relationship. Somebody came to me. She told me her husband was cheating on her and all this other kind of stuff. And I said, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Then she came back and told me, oh, we're the greatest relationship. So with all the going back and forth, I said, well, let me put her at ease. I said, I'm jealous of you. You have a perfect marriage. Everything's great, da-da-da-da. So then she went back and started thinking that I was actually jealous of her, which I wasn't. But I don't do relationships. It's too much emotional stuff for me. What I do is I do business coaching, and I help people figure out what their skills are, what their strengths are through communication, how to brand themselves, how to brand their business, and move to the next level. Because that's the way that I was brought up, was through communicating and over-communicating to make sure that things don't fester. And even with communication, there is a niche to it, because when you look at the 55-38-7 rule, which you guys probably know about already, but when you look at the 55-38-7 rule, University of California, I can't think of his name right now, basically 55% is body language, 38% is tone, you know, in your voice, and 7% is actually what you're saying. So with that in mind, you know, I might be saying something which is not in reality what I'm feeling or thinking. It comes through my understanding the body language and understanding the tone of what I'm saying. So through that, that's where I come in as a coach, is I help people to discern, you know, what is it that you're really saying. You don't have to put up your guards with me, because I'm not going to judge you. I'm just going to help you. And that's where the communication comes in. So as a life coach, some people know about life coaches, and not everybody does, but so as a life coach, I kind of work in that flow where people have a vision and they're on their way to that vision, and they might teeter in a little bit of anxiety, teeter in a little bit of boredom, but, you know, never anything where they're staying there and hanging out, bringing friends, you know, prop your feet up.
Right.
And if people get stuck in that anxious area or get stuck in that boredom area, that's where a therapist or clinician comes in, because I can't get you out. You know what I mean? That's not my skill. That's not my strength. So that's
right.
Where I say,
and the,
you know,
relationship,
when you ask,
talk probably goes over there too.
yes.
To Dr. Valentina. We defer those things over to Dr. Valentina.
Amen. Because like I said, the one, and you know what, the funny thing is, I didn't even think of the word jealousy as being anything, because I was just like, you know, just saying it in jest. But when I saw this person take it to heart, thinking that I was really, really jealous, which, you know, as a Christian and as a Bible study teacher, you learn that jealousy is sin. You don't become jealous of anybody. But when this person took it to heart, and I was just trying to appease her because her husband was cheating on her, I was like, I was like, look, I don't want to talk about relationships ever again. Ever again.
Yeah.
So as a coach, I stay in that business lane. But as an aneurysm survivor of so many other things, I realized the importance of communication, immediate, effective communication. I don't let people who are my friends and people who are in my circle, they know I don't let anything go overnight. If we have a situation or a scenario, let's talk about it. And as a teacher with my students, I do the same thing. You know, we talk about it immediately. And that I see, with that, I see a readiness. With that, I see a readiness to learn, you know, obtain the information, retain the information, and then actually apply the information. So with this podcast, I wanted to make sure that the reason why I brought in the mental health component is because that's not my area. I'm not a clinician. I'm not going to over-advertise or oversell or promise something that I cannot address. You know, I cannot address people who live in those areas. But Dr. Valentina, from our conversation and from the high recommendation from Samaria Walker, I mean, she just loves you. I thought that you would be a great asset for this. So, I mean, like, we've had, what, one, maybe two conversations? But based on her high recommendation of you, thinking like, gosh, this is a perfect fit for those questions and those scenarios as far as call-ins or whatever that may come in that I know that I cannot address, that we can work together and cohesively work with those people who call in and give them solutions or guidance or directions to a more comprehensive assessment. You know, my particular scenario, as I stated, you know, I was concerned because we were not at that point of doing a comprehensive assessment. And right now, I don't know if you know this, but 1/4 of people who actually go through brain or who actually have a brain aneurysm are misdiagnosed or delayed in the diagnosis. So what happens is that puts them closer to a possible rupture.
That's what happened to me. I wanted to comment on a couple things you said that are really important to accentuate, I think, to the listeners. And one of them is that, I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. I got misdiagnosed for 24 hours and was in a coma the next day. My brain aneurysm had ruptured. And I went to the hospital with a ruptured brain aneurysm, not knowing if I was on foot or horseback. I was in so much pain, and they said I was having a muscle spasm in my neck and sent me home. Now, there were a lot of miracles, blessings in my story, or I wouldn't be here talking today. I lived alone, but I happened to be going to have a cup of coffee with my dad, which I like never do back, this is in 1995, during the work day, and he happened to be driving, and it happened while I was a passenger in the car. So a couple blessings there is, one, I would have been driving when it happened. Number two, that I happened to be with my father, who took me to the hospital. And then if it would have been a friend, like, they maybe would have dropped me off at my house where I lived alone. And I would have taken the pain pill, praying it would make the pain go away so I could think clearly enough to say, this ain't no muscle spasm in my neck, you know, this is not, you know. And I just would have died. But because it was my dad, he said, we want you to come over to our house, you know, my folks' house, until the pill kicks in and we make sure that you're okay, and then we'll take you home. And it turned out I never did go home for a couple of weeks, because by morning I couldn't talk anymore or comprehend anymore. And they even called this fool, this doctor, at this happened at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, that evening at dinner time, I started the violent vomiting and so forth. It just wouldn't stop. And, of course, that hurts a lot when your brain is all in the process of exploding, you know, to keep doing that. They called the doctor, and the fool said to them, the pain medication must be too strong. Cut the next pill in half. Well,
wow.
None of us knew what to expect. And so by the next morning, I was stumbling to get out a sentence. You know, my mom was looking at me, as your mom does, and is able to fill in the sentence, you know, cocking her head like, oh, my God, there's something really wrong. And I could comprehend her. I just couldn't spit out a sentence. And then within a very rapid time, I couldn't comprehend her anymore. And she said, you know, to hell with the doctor. We're taking her back to the hospital. This isn't right. We went back. They gave me a CAT scan, and I was in a coma. I kind of remember writing to the hospital, but I don't remember the rest. So a couple things is, yes, Kelly, one of the things I appreciate that you did is that you knew if it runs in your family, if there happens to be a genetic component and you know about that, or I usually say when people say it was the worst headache I ever had in my life, no judgment for the way they describe it, but I've had some really bad headaches in my life, and this was not like that. This was a pain. I had pain like somebody just, a bolt of lightning just went off in my brain, or somebody just stabbed me in the brain. It wasn't like any headache I've ever had. So if you experience, you know, an odd kind of pain in your head that you've never felt before, particularly if it affects your vision, some of the other things that Kelly was talking about. And if you know that you have a family history, particularly the fact that Kelly stayed on him, told him that information, and pretty much demanded that they give her a CAT scan is something that I recommend that you guys do, because they don't do that, and there is quite a bit of misdiagnosis, and if you're able to function before something ruptures, because then you're not able to function, to think clearly, is definitely to push on them to do that CAT scan at least. And I guess, you know, the other thing about how long it took them from the time they, you know, did their testing and figured it out and then told you to come to the hospital, it took them a moment to realize the gravity of the situation. So even after you were insistent, shared family history, got on them about giving you a CAT scan, you did all the right things. The process, quote unquote, still took some time at, you know, where your life was really in jeopardy during that time that they were waiting until you got there, because you might not have known at the time what the consequence was of possibly waiting and that rupturing, but they should have. And that's one of the things that I found and just wanted to repeat the right things that you just said. The other part about the communication that I appreciate is that, you know, back in 95, I know it's different now, but back then there wasn't a computer on every desk. There wasn't a support group. There was no such thing as social media yet. And so I got to a point, you know, after a year where I looked normal and I could walk and talk, so I didn't have an obvious tell, but there's about a dozen things that not everybody with a brain injury has all dozen of these things, but everybody with a brain injury has some of these things on this list I've amassed from listening to all of you all for a decade, you know, thing. And a couple of those are emotional disorders, you know, depression, anxiety, / PTSD, short-term memory loss, overstimulation, or what I call full basket syndrome, too much, you know, or the bright lights, or noise with the ears, you know, sleep disorders, common things, you know, that come with brain injury, and sometimes seizures. And, you know, Kelly, I tried to tell people, and neurofatigue, that's a big one. I tried talking to all kinds of medical professionals in what I call the traditional medical model, your internist, your neurologist. The surgeon does nothing, but I don't minimize it, but save your life, and that's it. You know, your car is going through the body shop, boom, boom, boom. As soon as that surgery is over, you're over with them. You know, they don't go on to, there's not really a place that centralizes your various treatments after that. And so, you know, I would try talking to my family, and, you know, maybe I would try to make plans. It's when you're learning your new boundaries, if you are in the situation where you have to do that, which I was, you know, I would make plans like I used to make plans. And maybe that would be, you know, a plan on Friday night and a different thing on Saturday and eating with the family on Sunday. And when I found out that I didn't have that energy level to do it, you know, that I get up in the morning and chronic pain issues is another thing that comes out of this sometimes. But, you know, I get up and I liken it to one of the old iPhone models. Hell, one of the new ones for that matter in price. But, you know, you get up with people who've not had a brain injury before. Healthy people get up with their battery fully charged. And they get a day out of it. You know, maybe their battery starts going down a little bit as they're crawling into evening. But their battery starts with a full charge and it lasts them all day. Me, as a brain injury survivor, I get up with 3/4 maybe of a battery. Mm-hmm. My battery's never full when I get up in the morning. It's maybe 3/4. Then about dinner time, my battery's at 0 and my phone is shut off. My brain has shut off. And so I require a nap a lot of the time, and it's a recharge. It's a reboot. And that gets me through the rest of the evening. Well, you know, I was trying to explain some of these things to people when I would have to back out on, and I'm very responsible, and when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And there was a way I was used to being, and I still am, but I did it with you guys, as a matter of fact, when I was going to interview you on a Sunday. You know, I did because that was an available date, and I was booked till Wednesday. I said, sure, it's important that you guys get introduced. We'll do it on a Sunday, and realized I was in the middle of a tornado and drowning, and that what I said that made sense on a superficial, on a logical level, wasn't something I could function through doing a show twice during the week. And thank you for understanding that. But, you know, Kelly, the upshot of that whole thing is I tried to talk to people and they'd say, well, I get headaches all the time. Take a couple Advil and you'll be fine. I get tired all the time. You know, just push through and you know, come and do all three of the activities that you planned. And, you know, and people would get angry and not understand and try to compare what I was trying to communicate to them who had never been through what I had been through. My neuro fatigue isn't like they're tired. You know, my migraine isn't like their bad headache. And the frequency with which it happens, it's fatiguing. And so one of the, you know, what happened with me is I quit talking. You know, I quit talking because people weren't understanding. They weren't listening. And maybe I did need some validation back then too, but certainly understanding and maybe a dash of compassion. And I wasn't seeing it. So I stopped talking. And then I played a game called Act As If. Act As If This Never Happened. And that got me in a lot of trouble with my boundaries and a lot of other things, and that lends itself to the psychological part. But good points, Kelly, because the talking now, you know, we do have social media and there are support groups out there. There's groups on social media. There's people like yourself who have now who have written books that are life coaches as you are. And I want to make a comment about the kind too, just to specify why that's so important. And there's some resources now, and I encourage you to use them because, you know, we're only as sick as our secrets. And mine became secrets when I stopped talking, and it made me sick in a different way.
But you know what? As an only child, I find strength sometimes in removing myself. See, I'm from New Jersey, and in New Jersey, I was kind of like a bad A salesperson. I always exceeded my quota. I was always visible nationally and regionally with regards to sales and marketing. And my aggressive, assertive style does not necessarily do well in North Carolina. So what happened was being more aggressive, and people were telling me what I wasn't. You know, you're not this, you're not that, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I'm bringing data and research and et cetera to show that this is being done in other places. So what happened was I drained from that, and I had to go out and reach out to people who were in New York, New Jersey that I grew up with to make sure that, you know, what I was saying was valid, you know. And I had to reach out and look, Dr. Valentina, she's in Chicago. So what I did was I took a more national approach with my recent project that I did with my interns. Is I interviewed 25 former NCAA athletes on their stories of triumph to provide a pathway for current athletes who are going through stressors, the stressors that are indicated by the NCAA. And so that project is now closed. We've sent that to every single athletic director in the NCAA to provide as a resource tool for kids who are unable to communicate some of the things that they're going through. But even in doing that, when I tried to approach a lot of people here in North Carolina, they couldn't buy into the vision because it was only one pathway of doing it. And the way that I grew up, or the way that I lived in New York and New Jersey sales, New York and New Jersey sales, is that I was selling hotels, and my competitors were selling hotels. And don't tell anybody I said this, even though we're on, even though we're on an international podcast. A bed is a bed. So I best make sure that my bed has bells and whistles some kind of way when I'm selling to these corporate accounts. So the thing is, I could never do the rote traditional route of selling and exceed my quota. So even in my hope to educating people, because I'm an educator, right? 80%, 20% execution, Pareto's rule. So in order to do that 80% planning and 20% education, execution, I spent a lot of time doing the research to make sure I understood what I was talking about because one of the things as a Bible study teacher and the rest is you don't want to teach people the wrong way because it takes a long time to reteach them whatever you taught them incorrectly. So
right.
My time alone or my time away is my time to figure out how do I communicate to my audience? How do I more effectively communicate to them so that we can get to the end result? Because if we don't reach the end result, then everything is in vain. So mm-hmm. I take time away to make sure that when I come out, I'm thorough. And so if I reach an obstacle or I reach a challenge, I've done so much research in the background until it would take me 5, 10, maximum 15 minutes to give you the answer. And when I give you the answer, I want to quote it. I don't want to paraphrase mm-hmm. it. So it will take me 10, 15 mm-hmm. minutes to go back and do the research to give you the specific answer. And so, Kim, you know, you hear one situation with regards to an aneurysm, and it's probably, as I'm hearing from you, it's probably one situation. Because I can tell you right now, my semi-boyfriend, my friend, he kind of gets on me because I'm at the gym at 10 and 11 o'clock at night. I'm at the gym at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I do what I need to do with regards to coaching and with regards to working with my interns, and then I'm in the gym, and I'm communicating, and I'm networking because I'm getting my clients. I'm getting more clients while at the gym. So as far as the, you know, the sleep and the downtime that you're talking about, I have too many people calling and too many things going on to actually have that kind of quote-unquote downtime. But I will tell you, I have very selective time, meaning like there are certain conversations that I just choose not to engage in because they're counterproductive. Like I said, the relationship one where somebody thought that I was jealous, that wound up being counterproductive. So I don't go in those areas. And so someone may think that I'm being a recluse or not being engaged or et cetera, but that's just not a conversation where I feel as though I'm at that 80% of understanding and 20% mm-hmm. execution.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that I was raised. I mean, my parents taught me that if you don't know what you're talking about, if you don't know what you're talking about and you talk and you say something, you can lead someone down a very, very negative pathway. My dad was a tobacco farmer in Virginia, and he moved to New Jersey because he fell in love with my mom. He was just like, you know, he came up here on a trip, saw her on the bus, aww, said, that's the woman I'm going to marry, and wound up marrying her, obviously, because I'm here today. But the bottom line is he still had that Southern drawl. He still had a lot of those Southern characteristics. So we spent every weekend – no, I'm sorry, I'm exaggerating. I would say every other weekend in Manhattan where he would do extra work. But he would also use that as a time to learn about different cultures, to learn about, you know, just different things in the city and an eclectic environment so that he wasn't just stuck in that Southern, you know, in that Southern mode. So with me growing up, my parents always emphasized, understand your environment, understand the people, understand the needs, understand your strengths, understand your interests, understand, you know, understand those things so that when you go out and present, you are thorough. And I do not go out and present. I do not go out and share. I do not go out and teach until I know that I know that I know that I know. Because people mm-hmm. will ask questions. And as a teacher, kids are transparent. They don't have the filters that you and I have, you know. And so if you're not mm-hmm. correct, they will tell you in the middle of the class that in front of everybody that you're not correct, and you'll lose respect. So I've seen it done to other teachers. I've seen kids throw chairs at other teachers. So I've seen the works, the gamut. So for me, it's very important for me to know what I'm talking about before I speak.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, you know, that's true with everybody. We've got to be mindful of what we're talking about, and it's okay to say, I'm not really sure, I'll check on that. You know, a lot of time, that's another thing we have in common. I spent 30 years as a financial consultant, so I couldn't have the wrong answer or I could lose my license, go to jail, or get sued. So I was, you know, I had to be very sure, you know, that I was prepared to speak to whoever. And, you know, it didn't really matter. You know, I did something I call relationship selling, and that's I was more focused on the customer and relating to them where they're at. But yeah, interesting that we both have that. But, you know, one of the things about what you do and you emphasized about in being a life coach and the way that you're doing it is that I thought, because I did have to leave my career, and by the way, I still, even though I have my nap time, that reboots me, but you'd be surprised the amount of work I get done with people in other time zones when it's midnight my time. Because then I stay up from 12 to 1. So what I did is I had to adjust my hours, you know, to have a reboot for my battery in the middle, just like my old iPhone 6, because it's the last one that has, you can plug in earbuds and don't get one of the four rare tumors from putting your cell phone on your head. But that battery drains a lot faster, you know, and I'm older, but I just had to reconfigure my life. And so, you know, it's 9 or 10 o'clock when it's 11 or 12 here, and I'm booking people and talking to prospective guests, you know, at 11 or 12 my time, and I'm fresh because I had that reboot. But if I had to go continually, I wouldn't be able. But, you know, when I first came and it was slow, I've been doing this for every week for over 10 years now, and I thought when I first came here, I needed to leave my career because of the stakes I was telling you about. I was fine. My long-term wiring was fine, and so when it came to employee benefit packages and investment products, I went back to work for many years after my aneurysm. And I was self-employed, so I just worked less and made less, you know. There was no discrepancy in pay. Men and women got paid the same because it was a commission. So regardless of what you were, everybody made the same commission. You know, your livelihood was based on the amount of time you invested in your career and how good you were at it. But when I finally left, Bernie Madoff happened and Obamacare happened, and that changed the rules that were in my long-term hardwiring, brought it up into my short-term memory, which you tell me your name right now and I don't know it 10 minutes from now. And I was scared. I was scared because the stakes were too big. It wouldn't have been a matter of just losing my job. You know, I was managing people's money. So I felt like I needed to leave my career. I had a spotless, exemplary record, and I wasn't going to risk that by making a mistake that could be super costly for me and or my client. So I thought that was another transitional time, and I thought I had burned my skill set, that my skill set had gotten burnt. What's important about, one of the many things that's important about what you're doing, Kelly, is that it took me 3 years, to realize that what I do here, now I say that I used to work for big bucks and now I work for soul bucks because obviously I'm a volunteer here, but as far as my skill set goes, it took me a minute for it to register, but, you know, I'm still hiring, training, and recruiting hosts like I used to do other agents and brokers. I'm still interviewing, i.e. educating people, like when I made presentations in my job. I'm still networking to meet people to be on the show, people to be hosts. You came from a referral from another host. I've told my hosts, you know, we're on 7 nights a week, that, you know, we're often looking for good, I'm often looking for good host material, because we either have an opening or maybe we don't, but, you know, there is some turnover, and I like to have those prospects in my back pocket. And I realized, it took me a long time to realize, and I won't shame myself, I'll just say that I didn't burn my skill set. It was redirected. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. really what you're doing professionally, Kelly, is helping people to tap into. So, okay, maybe someone has never had a career, or they lost their career due to their brain injury. What you're helping them do is to identify those skills, or look at what those skills were that they had before their brain injury, and help people to re-channel the skills that they have. In the meantime, they may discover some skills they weren't aware they had that come to the surface as the volume gets turned down on a couple of the others. But many of the core skills, the ability to communicate, a lot of those things are still intact. And we're confused as the people who would come to you needing a life coach. You know, we're confused at how we rechannel, if we even still have the skill set. Oh, my God, I can't go back to the only career I've ever known. How am I going to move forward? I don't know where to start. It's a black hole. And to have somebody who's been through a similar experience, who has had a game-changing event, which brought you to some of the things that you're doing and talking about, like this podcast and like talking to athletes about sports injuries and others. You know, I don't know how much of that you were doing before you had a brain injury yourself, but, you know, now you can do it with some real credibility, having had one. You know, you do have an understanding, and to help people channel what the rest of their life is going to look like by identifying that skill set is really an invaluable service. And then people need someone like Dr. Valentina to help them get to you in a lot of cases, because, you know, there's a lot of depression and anxiety when you, like, right out of college, I went in the business and worked for 30 years. I mean, that's where I thought I was going to be till the end of my life. So before I could come to someone like you, Kelly, when I had to leave, I had to go through the grief. Was I doing the right thing? Too often people have defined themselves by what they did for a living, what they drove, where they lived, how much education they had. And if they didn't have or lost one of those things, they couldn't tap into their value as a human soul, which is valid, and it's there, because everybody who's got whatever their job, whatever their education, whatever their accent, they're all putting on their pants the same way, you know. And when you get cut, you're all bleeding the same blood. So, you know, to come to a Dr. Valentina to talk about the trauma, the depression, the loss, the prepping a person who's been through a game-changing event to then feel stable enough to come and help get that confidence that's totally been undermined, boosted up, to then be able to come to someone like Kelly and say, okay, now I'm ready to do the other work about how I can move forward in my career path for the rest of my life because of this change. So, again, very valid balance in the show that you guys are going to be having, because you can do either, you know, it's not mutually exclusive, you know, right after trauma, the trauma needs to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Kelly, so a person doesn't get stuck and is ready to come to you and say, okay, let's identify those skills and, you know, show me what you do. But in the meantime, you know, you were talking, well, you weren't talking, we'll give you a chance to talk, Dr. Valentina, but, you know, one of the things I mentioned in your bio was about neuropsychological testing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important, too, to help us identify what might be not functioning the way that it was before, and to hopefully learn a couple compensatory strategies.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing a neuropsych test in just about every one of them, but one of them was, and this is more when you get over into some other kinds of maybe occupational therapy, whatever, but they were doing the neuropsych lady was showing me like a half a dozen pictures. And let's say one picture was of a dining room, and let's say that it had mom, dad, the little boy, the little girl, what they were having for dinner on the table, what was on the walls, what color the walls were, all of that. It was a picture.
Mm-hmm.
She let me look at the picture for a couple seconds and then asked me to recall what I had just seen. So like I was guessing on a lot of those answers.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed. I may, in fact, I thought I'd try to outsmart her, right? That's what I'm here for, neuropsych testing, but I want to show that I'm not broken, right? So there's so many things to get past at your level for the survivor. You know, I mean, I just threw out that it was a little boy and a little girl because that's how it works, right? I didn't really know if it was two boys or two girls or what color their hair was. I just remember there was mom and dad and a couple of kids at the table, you know. Okay, a boy and a girl. Then she throws me. And what were they eating? Wow. I can remember the plates and the serving dishes and the food that was on it, but the detail of what it was it turkey, was it ham, was it meatloaf? No idea. What color were the walls? Don't know. And so we went through that with each of the pictures and, you know, I guessed a few things that I could and then didn't, you know, wasn't able to do the rest. And then to do the list of 10 words and do something else for a few minutes and then go back and want me to repeat the 10 words. And I, you know, the first word was apple and that really sucked, excuse me, that it started with an A because I'm like, apple. And the second and third word, you know, wouldn't come to be because I'm thinking of things like I've got kind of a eccentric mind anyway. I start thinking about I'm going to grandmother's house and I'm bringing an apple, a banana.
Exactly.
You know, and I can't remember the 10 words the gal gave me, you know. I'm like, I don't know. Apple and a nine other words. I'm sorry. And then, you know, you get frustrated. And that's another thing that needs to be discussed with you. When I can't do what I could easily do before, when I can sit here and sing you every word of songs, the platters, smoke gets in your eyes, you know, something from the 60s, you know, the Stones, whatever. I can sit here and sing to you right now the most words, every word with the right inflection of the most obscure songs from a million years ago. But if you ask me what I had for dinner last night, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Well, you know, when you've been kind of a perfectionist and brought up the, you know, similar to like Kelly, I was expected to get A's. There were a lot of expectations, you know, of perfection and competition, some things that I look at a lot differently now than how it was coming up. But, you know, when you've had that, the good news about it is it gives you drive and it channels your energy. But when you're not able to do it after an injury immediately, you're pissed off. You're frustrated, angry, frustrated, weepy, depressed, sad. You know, there's all these emotions that come to the top, and you can't very effectively go at that moment and talk to Kelly because Kelly doesn't want to send anybody out on the job trail, you know, that's got this tornado of emotions going on that need to be sorted out before they can get serious and be able to move forward, you know, with a little more balance back in their life and some of the volume turned down on that anger and learning some skills that hopefully, you know, you will be talking about in future shows, things like the neuro testing also, because a lot of people have had their brain injuries and it's never been suggested to them that they get neuropsychological testing. And so I think someday, you know, that would be a good show to go around is psychological testing, what people can expect when they go in to get neuropsych testing, because it was years until a shrink suggested to me that I go get testing. Finally, somebody half-assed heard what I was trying to tell them, but they didn't know the answer. But what he did know was that he didn't have the answer, and that one thing that might really help is to send me to someone like you who could do the neuropsych testing, and we could actually find out what my deficits were and be able to work around it, because I was caught in the anger, the frustration, the depression, and hadn't learned any compensatory strategies. Now, the good news is because eventually I came here, nobody really, the testing was the testing that identified the issues. But what it didn't do, at least there, what it didn't do, was teach me any compensatory strategies to mitigate that anger, that sadness, that frustration. You know, my short-term memory. I remember, and I've told this a million times before, so I'll just make it really quick, but the very first time I dialed into this show over a decade ago and heard our founder, Craig, which you will meet sometime, I heard him say, he lived in a world of post-it notes, and I and the hair went up on the back of my neck, and I felt like, I mean, I'm looking around and I'm by myself, you know, but I'm looking around because I'm feeling like, oh my God, this guy is like across the country, and I felt like the kid with her hand caught in the cookie jar. It's like, wow, someone knows, you know, what this is like. And doing the post-it notes and then forgetting where you put them. I'm going to put this in a really important place because it's a really important thing, important enough to write on a post-it note. And then I don't remember where the safe place was. And so, you know, it was a guest who was on one night talking about compensatory strategies. And she said she got cool notebooks and wrote them down in her notebooks. That way, everything that was important, you knew it was in the notebook. And so I switched from post-it notes to that. But see, it really helps again, to build someone's self-esteem and mitigate some of the findings in that testing to learn how to compensate. And then to Kelly, to come to you, to be able to get help and support in creating this new phoenix that's going to come out of the ashes as far as the jobs go, the career goes, or how a person is going to channel themselves to change careers is so invaluable, because if you've done what you've done, that's what you know how to do. And you weren't really thinking about alternatives before you had to in a lot of cases. So all of a sudden you're going, huh, what does that mean I would be qualified for now? And coach is a great word, because maybe you're feeling a little less sure of yourself, maybe a little self-conscious if you've got any issues like short-term memory loss or any of that, and you're going to be going out and looking for a new profession. It's so helpful to have a partner in that, i.e. the coach, the same like the coach in sports. You know, those players couldn't do much by themselves. They might be able to go out and shoot hoops or do whatever they're doing on their loan and alone, and they're a great athlete and whatever. But as far as putting the team together, organizing it, and honing the skill set of who's good at what and what position you play and that kind of thing, it helps to have the coach, you know, be able to help you determine those things and then get you going in the right direction. So I just think that that's really super. The show again is going to be Moving Forward, and it'll be on the third Sunday of each month. July 18th will be their first show on their own. And we still have time left, but I wanted to stop in the middle and just identify that we've got Kelly KJ. You're going to hear her called sometime, nicknamed Jones, and Dr. Valentina, who are going to be co-hosts moving forward, the new show coming up. And just thought we'd get a chance. I also, when hosts come, you know, I get a chance to maybe talk to them once. And so I started, well, pretty much when Craig turned everything over, you know, you never want to volunteer and be good at it, because you wind up having the job for life. I'm finding out all kinds of things, right? You know, I've been running the network now for 8 years, you know, I don't know where the guy is that pays the bill, but you know, he's not around here much, like never.
But you're But you're loving it, right? You're having a blast.
I'm grateful when I get referrals like Terry gave me to you guys. I did love it in the beginning, but what I came for in the first place was to help other people. That means to do my show. I had a mission statement, and it wasn't to run a network. It was to do my show. And what happened was I didn't know anything except my story. So one of the things I'll say, and I'll say it now as a disclaimer on my own show, is that I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a researcher in a formal capacity, a legal capacity. What I am is an expert on my own story, and I bring people to you that, you know, that are going to help with some things maybe your doctor doesn't necessarily talk to you about, some awareness and advocacy issues that aren't talked about enough. And in Brain Injury Radio, one of the things I like is I'm every one of the chairmen of the board of every association or alliance that has anything to do with the brain, and it's political. They all have a separate one. Brain aneurysm mm-hmm. has two. TBI has two. Stroke has a couple. Every possible brain mm-hmm. injury there is has a couple different alliances. And what I found is, again, I appreciate that when it's Awareness Month, you can go to the website and get great stats to educate people out there on how frequent, you know, 1 in 3 people have an aneurysm, that kind of stuff. But if you're a survivor and you're calling, I need help. How can you help me? You're our advocacy group.
Wow.
Right? That's mm-hmm. on the board. What you find out is that the board of directors doesn't have a survivor on it, and that the top two people make a very fat salary. And what you hear about is the run or the walk once a year, where you pay $25 for a real scratchy T-shirt that you wouldn't wear anyway. It's not even the soft. I've got a cloth fetish, I'll tell you, girls. I really love soft fabric, and you know, really soft, nice fabric that feels soft on your skin. Those scratchy T-shirts, man, just drive me nuts. And I'm thinking, you know how much they make, and we're getting a walk a year with this scratchy T-shirt, you know, that we're paying $25 for to support our advocacy group that doesn't have any of us. And so what I like about bringing in T-shirt.
Okay. I was going to say, with the T-shirt, you sound like the guy. You ever see the commercial where they're going out on a date and the guy has a shirt with the neck, and the neck is all stretched out?
Yes.
You sound like that's the kind of T-shirt they give you, the one with the stretched out neck.
Well, that's kind of what they're like, and the quality of the cotton. I mean, they're cheap, so they're scratchy. You know, I've got some chronic pain conditions, and so it's not all a joke, but I'm also girly girl, and I like the softer fabrics. I don't like scratchy fabrics. I don't like tight, you know, binding stuff anyway. I've changed a lot over the years, but anyway, I forgot what I was gonna say. It must not have been that important, but what I like about Brain Injury Radio is that it's called Brain Injury Radio, which leaves, I feel so blessed, because for somebody who knew nothing, when I tripped into being a host, I learned more from other survivors in my first couple years than I had learned in the almost 2 decades prior since my injury from the traditional medical model. And other. I learned more from the survivors. And so here I'm coming on as a host to get experts and to share my experience, strength, and hope, and then get others to do the same, bring on survivors, caregivers, scientists, doctors, researchers, therapists, different treatment modalities, all kinds of the things that I do on the show, bringing that to help support awareness. And, you know, I was so fortunate because I didn't know anything, and I landed at Brain Injury Radio, which is all-inclusive. So even though the brain injuries are different, the brain is the same organ, you know. So if you have damage, whether it's from an aneurysm or a car accident or whatever it's from, and it's your left front temporal lobe, okay, then you're going to have certain things that are going on regardless of what the cause was. And, yeah, everybody's got a different story for sure. But we also have a lot of similarities, and that's why these things, why the show works, why it was on. Craig did it once a week for the first 2 years. And he was not that far out from his injury, and he was using this as kind of a cathartic way for him to work, for him to talk, for him to do that talking. You're you mentioned earlier, Kelly, he was cathartically talking to the world through his process. And what he found out in that first 2 years of doing it once a week is that he was not the only one, that everything he was saying was resonating, and the audience was getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's when, after 2 years, he decided to run it 7 nights a week, because this was so prevalent and the resources weren't there, that he started running it 7 nights a week. And that's when Providence had it, that happened into that first show, and had written my book and was doing an author interview, and he heard me interview and called and asked if I wanted to be one of the original hosts. And it was so clever, because I said, gee, thank you so much, but I'm not tech savvy. I really don't know anything about brain injury except my story and what happened to me. I'm not qualified, you know, to do that, but thank you. It means a lot that you offered it. And he said, okay, all right, yeah, I get it. And then he said, hey, before I let you go, he said, were you an author before you wrote your book? No. No, I wasn't. And you've got a brain injury, right? Yes, I do. He said, you're qualified. What night do you want? And I said, Wednesday. And, you know, that was 10 years ago. So things
Kim, what do you
happened.
Think the most, what do you think has been the most surprising thing or something, some fact or some underlying message that you've heard since you've been doing this? What completely floored you? Like, oh, my goodness, I would have never thought that.
Well, the level of misdiagnosis even still, you know, when mine happened, like I said, it was 1995, things were different, and it's been a long time since 1995. I have some disappointment at the level of misdiagnosis still going on about brain injuries, because I hear about it all the time, the newcomers, you know, that are 1 or 2 years out, they were misdiagnosed, and I hear it all the time. And also that thing about the difference between PTSD and brain injury, that a person gets diagnosed for one of those and not the other because of the overlapping symptoms. The doctor starts treating one of them, but the other one doesn't get addressed. And so you wonder why the progress isn't being made that was expected. It's because half of the problem, only half of the problem, is being dealt with. And so one of the other things, too, that I think is really relevant, because, you know, we talked once before that people who have had a brain injury are statistically more apt to have another than someone who's never had one. And one of the things that I think is interesting is we sat here one night, me and somebody, and we were talking about, say, accidents, for example, that when you get hurt, times about that misdiagnosis thing or being totally undiagnosed and being a surprise. I'll give you an example. When I was 17, somebody asked me once if I had had other brain injuries, and I do have post-concussion syndrome now for a fall I had in 2015, but prior to 1995, I would have told you no. You know, I had never had any issue before. So here's an example. I'll just give you my example, but I've heard this example played out in car accidents and falls and a million different scenarios, and you'll see what I mean. I went horseback riding, and the horse was malfunctioning. Honest, it wasn't me. These horses knew at the end of the ride, these were old nags, man. They would not even walk fast. And you're like, geez, what are we paying for? And I'm in the summer between college and, I mean, high school and college. So I'm like, what, 18, 17, something like that. And we're riding these horses, and they won't even walk fast, let alone anything else. And so we're getting to the end of the ride. There's like 10 minutes left, and there was a phenomena I wasn't hip, called barn crazy. And rental horses know at the end of the ride they get fed. And so all of a sudden this horse that for 50 minutes even walk bolted. He just bolted.
Wow.
And I was up in some bluffs, wooded bluffs, and I made a bad decision because I was holding on. I didn't fall when it bolted. In fact, I had the reins pulled back so hard in my younger, really strong arms that the horse's head was up in the air. But another thing I found out is they can put that bit between their teeth, and it doesn't matter. You know, how hard you're pulling, they won't stop. And so these branches and stuff were hitting me in the head and hitting me in the body and all of this. And so I get this bright idea that it would be good for me to bail. Well, okay, that wasn't a good idea. When I came off the horse, I snapped my femur bone, but I went bouncing down a bluff, this bluff. I was at the top of a bluff, and I went bouncing down this bluff that had rocks and tree trunks and all the things that you would find rolling down a hill in a forest before I landed with this broken femur. And one of the things that you just asked me, that was the long way around it, Kelly, but what they looked at was the obvious, and that was this twisted, mangled, broken femur. Did anyone ever do a scan of my head or do any neuropsych testing or do anything? Because chances are my head probably hit a few things on the way bouncing down that hill, you know, whether it was one of the many rocks or just the ground, you know, from where I fell, you know, came down, bailed off the tall horse and started bouncing. And that happens all the time. First responders and so forth focus on what they can see and don't check your whole body. One of the things I'd like to see is if a person's been in a situation where, whether it's domestic abuse or they've had a fall or they've had a car accident or, you know, whatever it might be, that they do testing at more than what they can just see, because still today, again, I've heard enough stories, and it plays into that disappointment in how many misdiagnoses or no diagnosis until real bad things have happened, is looking beyond the obvious. You know, they treat the obvious. If you're bleeding, they stop the bleeding and they fix what's bleeding. If you've got a broken bone, you know, they fix the broken bone, but they don't necessarily think big picture. Okay, this person got this broken bone by this car accident. You know, did they happen to hit their head? Maybe ask a few more questions. You know, did your head hit the windshield? You know, did you feel dizzy? Did you feel, you know, maybe asking some more questions? And I feel like one of the things, aside from our listeners, that we help by supporting and advocating and raising awareness is so many of our listeners share links to shows with their medical professionals. And that's something that I think is super important, is getting the word out to medical professionals, because most of them, and I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, they're very busy doing what they specialize in, and they have about a page and a half in their textbook on brain injury, and they're, you know, I mean, everybody's heard of cancer, everybody's heard of heart disease, everybody's heard of diabetes. You know, 2.5 million people a year get a brain injury. And so it's pretty prevalent year after year after year. You probably know a lot of people that have brain injuries and you don't even know it. And half of them don't even know they have them, you know. And some of those, Kelly, is going to be are going to be some things that I think is going to come up when it comes to sports, because, you know, you take enough blows to the head in sports, and let's say that you had been a certain kind of student before you started playing certain sports that precipitate jerking of the head or banging of the head frequently, you know, over a course of years. And then the person suddenly, their loved ones or their friends or whatever, notice a change in their personality or in their behavior. Or they notice at a young age, college age, or getting right into the pro age, that maybe they're not remembering things quite as well as they used to, or they're grabbing the wrong word. You know, they're having aphasia. And they don't know what that's from. You know, they have no idea that that's likely an accumulation of blows to the head that have caused cognitive damage or behavioral damage to the brain that has resulted in a change in their personality. Maybe they have a more short temper. Maybe they're more moody.
A lot of times they learn to habituate pain. Well, they learn to habituate the pain. The line between pain tolerance and pain threshold gets blurred because, you know, as an athlete, the one thing that you always hear is, you know, okay, suck it up and let's keep going. And, you know, we don't have time for that. And you're being a baby and all. And there are other words that they use. I'm just trying to keep it nice and soft. But the bottom line is because there is such a, like I said, the lines are so muddy between the two until they buy into what other people are telling them. So, you know, it's just because Johnny had the same exact injury and he was fine, that doesn't mean that Bobby can take the same type of blow and be fine. So what happens is everybody's used to Johnny getting hit. So when Bobby gets hit, they say, well, you know, Johnny did it. I don't see why you're complaining. And then what happens is he buys into the story of somebody else and you know, foregoes the additional observation or doesn't get checked fully. So a part of the challenge with athletes is that they may know something's different or feel something's different, but there's a lot of pressure to not walk in it. If you listen to one of the interviews I did with Mark Knapp, he's somebody I went to high school with. He's an AAU coach and a middle school basketball coach, female basketball coach, and he talked about how females have more injuries than boys at that age during adolescence. But what he clearly states is that he has talked to his players about the pressures and concussions and different things. And what he says is, you know, sometimes you'll see the players get like that deer in the headlights look when he's talking about it because he knows there's a lot of pressure on them to not say all the things that are going on. Do you know what I mean? And we're talking about some kids, high school and college kids, which you'll hear in the interview, where they say, hey, look, you know what? I can't say that I've got a concussion or I can't say that something's wrong because my scholarship is on the line, my financial stability is on the line, my branding, my imaging, my, you know, my popularity, whatever it may be, is on the line if I walk in it. So as I've read more about podcasts, and I'm not professing to be a guru, but as I've read more about it, one of the things that two things seem to be the top genres, and one is entertainment, and the other one is news or information. So I figured, or I was hoping, with the Moving Forward podcast, that we can present some of the things that, you know, you're suggesting, Kim, or, you know, bring in athletes and individuals, you know, clinicians, et cetera, who can talk about the things that you're talking about. And in a way that people are able to hear it and address it. You know, there's four ways that we learn, VARC, visual, audio, reading, writing, and kinetic. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And sometimes
exactly.
when people have a challenge, they'll tell you, go read about it. Well, not everybody wants to read. Like a lot of people that I work with, you know, will tell me, I don't read or I'm not going to read. So this podcast, this platform, what you and Craig have done is phenomenal because it allows another audience to get the information that they need in the way that's best suited for them. And, you know, I'm all about strength-based. What strength? What is your interest? What is your like? You know, where do your resources lie? And how do you capitalize on that to get to the next level? So the things that you're talking about as far as access, it's very key that persons who know that something's wrong also address it in a timely manner.
Right.
Because delays, the article I sent you guys, you know, 6 months after an injury, 6 months after injury, PTSD can set on. It doesn't have to be the actual inset. I always talk about onset. I always talk about delayed onset PTSD.
And symptoms for TBI too. You know, they can often not manifest for a couple months. But I just noticed the clock, Kelly. I don't want to interrupt you, but we actually have just about 16 minutes left. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Valentina, you haven't said much. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you have in mind for point counterpoint? Your contribution to the upcoming shows, and then I will let you ladies go early because I don't want to get too much. You guys got your own shows to be doing, so I don't want you giving away all of your secrets now. I just wanted everybody to get to know you and be looking forward as much as I am to you guys' new show, again, the third Sunday of every month called Moving Forward. But Dr. Mm-hmm. Valentina, before we have to go, take your time and what do you hope to contribute, get out of the show?
Well, the first thing I'd say is I really want to find a creative way to increase accessibility of care, right, to individuals, right? And so when we think about mental health services, the need is great, yet the workers are few. And so, you know, it's interesting because oftentimes people come, you know, they seek care, except the system seems to be set up more for quick fixes, which tend to show up as more like a prescription, you know, a psychiatric drug prescription as opposed to actual therapy. And so, you know, and then there's also, I know that part of that issue for medical providers could also be just that there's not a whole lot of accessibility of, you know, mental health professionals, you know. And so especially when I just think of Chicago, like Medicaid, underserved, like low income. And so really my desire is to, you know, increase awareness, understanding, you know, of the issues at hand, the symptoms that kind of come with it. I want to normalize it. But I also want to, like, you know, provide, as you all was talking about, strategies, because in the end, you know, there's no, you know, strategies on so many levels, right? Like, I imagine that, you know, Kelly will find somebody that will be a great interviewee as far as, like, just somebody who's willing to tell their story, right? And I imagine that there'll be people listening in and we'll be like, man, I'm going through something similar. I would want to be able to come in and distinguish, you know, the fact that there are these different types of issues that could be going on so that, you know, everybody doesn't assume that they have, right, a certain issue, because they're just like in mental health, I would think in physical health, there's a lot of overlapping symptoms across different illnesses, you know, disorders. And so we don't want everybody also thinking they got a TBI if they got, you know, or they got a concussion if it's some other type of brain injury. But then I would also, yes, you know, provide strategies for, you know, how to manage, you know, the depression, right, that typically coexists with a physical issue. And naturally, you know, people experience grief secondary to the loss. But I would want them to, I would provide a lot of psychoeducation where I'm really, you know, distinguishing the fact that even though there's overlap across symptoms that come with grief and loss with depression, that this will be grief and loss. You see what I'm saying? Versus depression, or this is anxiety, and this specific, yes, type of anxiety, like maybe it's an adjustment disorder because you're adjusting, changing your life versus full on PTSD. Now, when you were saying earlier too about the D, like PTS without the D, that is not in our diagnostic statistical manual, right? We're on version 5, so 5th edition. So I don't know who mentioned that or what the source is, but and maybe it's related to something somewhat similar, but just not, you know, the same, because PTSD is PTSD, you know.
It is, and it's the military, actually, that wants to go that way. They're offended. Everybody's offended with something. They're offended with the word disorder. Mm-hmm. They think post-traumatic stress covers it. And maybe the 6th mm-hmm. edition will say that, yeah, and maybe mm-hmm. it won't. But it mm-hmm. it is, you know, I don't know, whatever.
I mean,
it's going on all over the place.
And I mean, honestly, maybe there is a better word to use. Maybe that word is outdated, but in the end, you know, it's sort of in a name that something is out of order. You know, something is not right, you know. And so you got to call whatever you're going to call it, let's make it clear, because this is beyond stress.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's this, you know,
yes,
right? Like, So yeah, really that's my purpose is helping people feel understood, heard, right, which is what you all were saying, getting like to the point where people want to talk, they want to share their story, because in the end, you know, the whole concept of your secret or silence is your sickness and suffering is real. Like, that is exactly what the enemy will use, right, this sense of shame to get people to stay quiet so that you can then, you know, like go from having a normal sort of understandable sadness, right, to then full-on depression. That's how that happens. Normal stress to full-on anxiety disorder because of your silence. And, I won't just encourage people to talk to any old body because there's people who just don't deserve, you see what I'm saying, that kind of that kind of access, right? Like, you just can't talk to everybody,
right,
because people will make you feel crazy. People, even what you and Kelly were talking about, you were saying something about culture, and I think it was when Kelly was saying that she went from living in New Jersey to living in, like, I don't know if it was South Carolina or one of, you know, very good. That the cultural changes almost in a sense made her feel like something was wrong with her strategy or her approach, you know, that something that would have been seen in one culture as, like, you know, assertive and, like, attractive and wonderful, that go-getter type of spirit, in another culture might look like aggressive, might be unwanted,
right,
and that kind of stuff can breed, you know, stress and anxiety,
yes,
and depression, even loneliness. And so I would just really, you know, normalize people's experience, educate, of course, on, you know, the co-occurrence across the disorders and how, and also the symptoms even within or between, I should say, the different even physical, you know, brain injuries, and then, of course, provide strategies and suggestions, not only to the person speaking, but also to the listeners, because in the end, the intention is for them to leave feeling like prepared, like kind of like that. It's really sad that people have to educate and share, like your listeners, stories with medical providers, because it really speaks to the fact that they aren't being educated deeply on these issues, or perhaps they are, right? The alternative is that they are. They're just because of systemic perhaps issues, right, where they have these 15-minute appointments, not really having the opportunity to go deep. You know, like it could really be more of a system. I think it's a systemic issue. You know, when you got some stuff like this, as far as misdiagnosis and underdiagnosis and overdiagnosis, and you know, you that you know, you almost make something which that would really be functional dysfunctional, and then there's other times where it's like, you know, this underdiagnosing. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think it'll be really a really good show.
I do too. So anyway, we're winding down, but Kelly and Dr. Valentina, thank you so much for coming on tonight and allowing me the time to get to know you better and letting the listeners get to know you better. And I'm really excited now. I was before, but after getting the opportunity to know you guys better and to hear what you've got planned. And I've got people in the chat room, and they're saying the same thing, that they think that you guys are really great and going to make a great show. So you've gotten some compliments already by people that are listening. Great speakers, you know, a couple of the comments here, and very knowledgeable, looking forward to the new show. So the new show will be July 18th, the third Sunday of each month. It's called Moving Forward. And tonight we've had Kelly K.J. Jones and Dr. Valentina, who will be co-hosting on that show starting July 18th. And thank you both so much for being guests on my show tonight. I really appreciate it, and thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to close out with a couple of songs for the audience, as I normally do, as we're going to be kicking off into the long weekend and recognize our independence. Believe it or not, we got some. And we can take responsibility. And that's the thing, one of the things both of these, this new show and both of these women are helping us do, is to be empowered where we might have never been, or we might have lost our feeling of empowerment when the rug got pulled out from under us in life. And they're going to help us get that back. So thank you so much, you guys. Have a great 4th. I look forward to being at your first show, and I'll be talking to you before then. So thanks for being here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim.
Happy 4th of
thanks,
July,
you guys.
See you.
Thanks, Kelly. All
bye
right.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. I think it's going to be an exciting show. So you can look in my program notes and find their websites and to learn more about the ladies, Dr. Valentina and Kelly, if you'd like. But tune in to their show the third Sunday of each month, and it will be advertised on the Brain Injury Radio Facebook page and various other places. So I look forward to having them join the team. Now, next week, I'm going to be having on, and I'm so grateful that fireworks weren't going off like crazy tonight, because they have been, and scaring my dogs, but there's been public service announcements on television lately about our military and PTSD and fireworks, especially like cities I live in where it's not limited to organized events. People, your neighbors, are able to buy explosives and play with them for about a week. Now, the 4th of July, the 4th of July. That's one day. You get to buy fireworks here 10 days ahead of that. And they tell you you can't play with them until July 2nd. But it hasn't been working that way. So my pets, people around the country with PTSD, this can be a very difficult time for them. So as we celebrate our independence and hopefully enjoy safe, organized firework events, if we're going to be going to them, people will be careful if they're using explosives at home, and remember that they're amateurs and that they're dangerous, and that every year emergency rooms fill with people who have accidents from things exploding in their face or in their hands or their bodies. And if only they could stay in the people's own yard with their own dog and their own kid. But no, things like bottle rockets and all of the different things go flying into other people's yards and have a risk of hitting other people or getting in the yard and having other people's dogs walk out there and start chewing on gunpowder. So everybody, try to be kind to your neighbor, mindful of what you're doing, and safe as we go into the 4th of July. And our independence was a long, hard fight from the Revolution up to right now. So if you see a veteran, make sure to thank them for their sacrifice and service, as I'd like to do, and tell you that next week on my show is going to be Dr. Chris Ann Gordon, who was on my show a long time ago, and you all loved her, but she's coming back. She's affiliated with an organization now called Resurrecting Lives. And Resurrecting Lives is a veteran help organization. And somebody that went through the program, a veteran, and got help was Tim Bakiel. And they asked him, he writes songs for other artists. He's not used to writing songs for himself and being a performer. He doesn't do that. He does that so other people can perform, and has written songs for a lot of people you've heard of. But they asked him if he would write a song for them, for Resurrecting Lives. And next week, Tim is going to be a guest along with Dr. Chris Ann Gordon. And I wanted to play his song, which is aptly named Brainstorms. And he's actually performing this one himself. As much as he didn't want to, they talked him into doing it. And I think he does a beautiful job. And I'm looking forward to having them on next week. So everybody have a happy, safe 4th of July. Enjoy your long weekend, but remember to have gratitude. No matter what kind of chaos is going on in our country, everybody else in the world is trying to get into it. So we just need to know how grateful that we have the freedoms that we do, and that we're not victims. We can be empowered and take responsibility for ourselves. And that's what the fight was about. So here's Tim Bakiel, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Good night and God bless everyone. Thanks so much.
Baghdad, to Basra, the boss from the Bakersfield, the hottest battle I ever fought, raging inside of me. My brain has been battered, scrambled and rattled, and no one knows what's going on with me. I walk the halls and I've climbed the walls, drink everything inside, and swallowed all I could find. Look for stronger things to cool my weary mind. Put that 8-ball and 38 won't save my life. 'Cause I have brainstorms, I have brainstorms, and I can't wait till that morning light. Found hope in the most peculiar place. By the grace of God, I'm still in the human race. Broke free from this broken brain. Restore my will, refine my faith. 'Cause I had brainstorms, I had rainstorms, but now I can't wait till that morning light shines.
That was Timothy Backle with Brainstorms. Looking forward to having him and Dr. Chris Ann Gordon from Resurrecting Lives on next Wednesday night. And now, aptly, I think, for the 4th of July, I'm going to play Dave Bray, back when he was with Madison Rising, but Dave Bray from DaveBrayUSA.com. Singing the Star Spangled Banner. I'm on my knee to God, and I'm on my feet to the flag. So here we go. The Star Spangled Banner, in a way you probably haven't heard it before, unless you've heard this song. So happy 4th of July. We'll see you next week.
Can you see by the dawn? rocket's treadmill. The bombs busting in air. Gaze proof through the night. Set our flag was still there.
Before that with Brainstorms, two wonderful veteran indie artists. So check them out. And Dave Bray USA, he's got some great merch and a lot of great tunes. And looking forward to Tim and Dr. Chrisanne next week. All right, everybody. Good night.